As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of healthcare in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
The Rug Gallery is celebrating its 25th anniversary jubilee celebration with a colossal tent sale, offering up to 75% off at La Encantada Shopping Center at Campbell and Skyline in Tucson. With over 2,000 hand-woven imported rugs from around the globe, the Rug Gallery has rugs just right for your home or the largest palace. With an international reputation, the Rug Gallery has graced the cover of Christie's magazine and is featured in many other high-end publications. Stop by and check out the Rug Gallery with Arizona's largest in-stock inventory of fine, high-quality, hand-woven, imported rugs during the colossal tent sale with up to 75% off at Tucson's La Encantada Shopping Center in the foothills of the Catalinas. Or visit the Rug Gallery online at ruggalleryaz.com/sale or call 571-RUGS. You are listening to the Buckmaster Show as we air previously broadcast segments that we believe are worth a second listen. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show live line is the award-winning writer Deanne Stillman. She divides her time between Tucson and Southern California. Her latest true crime book is titled Desert Reckoning, A Town Sheriff, A Mojave Hermit, and The Biggest Manhunt in Modern California History. Deanne is the author of Mustang, The Saga of the Wild Horse in the American West. That book was a Los Angeles Times best book of 2008. She's also the author of the cult classic 29 Palms, which Hunter Thompson called a strange and brilliant story by an American writer, an important American writer. Deanne is also the author of Joshua Tree, Desolation Tango, published by the University of Arizona Press in 2006. Deanne, good to talk with you and catch up with you again. The last time we talked was on TV. I think we were talking about the book 29 Palms.
Right, Bill. I remember that, and thanks. Thanks so much for having me back on your show.
Tell me
just one quick comment.
Sure.
Desert Reckoning is narrative nonfiction, even though a crime is involved. It's really not true crime.
Not true.
So no.
So it's technically
a difference in
not
the genres,
true crime.
So.
But it certainly is the a true story is the inspiration for the book, right?
Oh, of course. It's based on a Rolling Stone article of mine about two men on a collision course. Mojave Hermit, who killed a beloved town sheriff in the Antelope Valley, north of Los Angeles, in 2003. And I explore in my book who these men are and why they were on this collision course and how their backstories led to this fatal shootout at the Hermit's trailer on a hot August day in 2003.
You know, you think about the Wild West, and of course we think about Tombstone here in southern Arizona, Deadwood in the Dakotas. You don't really think about Los Angeles County, do you, as the Wild West?
No, it's a really good question, and that's something I explore in my book, The Frontier History of Los Angeles County. And really during the 17 and 1800s and into the early 1900s, it was more violent outpost than either Tombstone or Deadwood. In fact, it was the most violent place in the country. You know, it was as far west as you could go, and everybody who didn't fit in elsewhere went there.
This manhunt that went on for this desert hermit involved a lot of different law enforcement agencies and a lot of people, didn't it?
Right. As I say in my subtitle, it was the biggest manhunt in modern California history, and it involved the FBI and DEA and Edwards Air Force Base and six or seven different sheriff's agencies, including the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, their SWAT team, and their homicide department. And the manhunt went on for 7 days because this hermit, who was kind of a Dr. Doolittle figure with an assault rifle, because he knew the desert so well, he was really able to outfox this massive high-tech posse, which was using gear from the Gulf War. He was able to elude them, you know, one man literally against thousands for one entire week until at the end of the 7 days they finally had him cornered in a complex of sheds near where the crime had originally happened.
Set up the incident itself for us, Deanne.
Well, it was a hot August day in 2003. It was about 110 degrees in the shade, and Donald Cook, the hermit, was at home in his trailer, kind of melting down after finding out months prior to this incident that his son had died of a drug overdose, and he himself was an ex-felon and had vowed never to return to jail and had been out there taking care of wild animals and also nurturing this very intense hatred of law enforcement. And on that August day, Deputy Sheriff Steven Sorensen, who was kind of an Andy of Mayberry figure in that part of the Mojave, turned down the this remote dirt road leading to Donald Cook's trailer, and he was following up on a trespassing call. There had been a complaint about a squatter in the area, and he headed to Donald Cook's trailer, perhaps looking for the squatter. No one knows exactly why, but he and Cook had had a run-in years prior. Sorensen had pulled Cook over during a road rage incident on it was another hot August day around high noon, and that encounter almost became violent very quickly until some other cops intervened. And Cook, the hermit, had tried to get Sorensen fired, spent months trying to get him fired, and it came to naught. And then here it is years later where they have this fatal encounter at Cook's trailer when Sorensen turns down this remote road following up on a complaint about a squatter. And there is Cook kind of preparing for the day that a cop may cross his line in the sand. And that's exactly what happened when Deputy Sorensen showed up that day. And Cook blew him away, literally.
Deanne Stillman is with us. She's the author of Desert Reckoning. The desert's very important in your work. How about the fate of the Mojave Desert? The outlaws who live there, the plants and animals, who are really kind of the last of their kind, aren't they?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, the Joshua tree grows in only one place, and that's at an elevation of 2,000 to 6,000 feet in the Mojave Desert. And I know there are a few here in Tucson, but they're kind of they're outliers. They're just visiting, really. And there are people who, you know, like the Joshua tree and certain animals and other plants that can only flourish in a part of the Mojave, including you know, a breed of Mojave outlaw, and they're all out there, and they just want to be left alone. And most of them can't flourish in cities, and fortunately, we have, you know, our wide open spaces. I think otherwise, our cities would probably be much more violent than they are. You know, our wide open spaces are a sanctuary for a lot of people and plants and critters. And the Mojave and other desert areas are being squeezed these days. People like Donald Cook are out there kind of making a last stand as things like tract housing and freeways, they're closing in. That's what's going on, you know, in our wilderness areas.
Deanne, what would you like the reader to take away from Desert Reckoning?
Well, actually, my book ends on a note involving the sacred. Something I look for in my book is that there is amid, you know, a world where all seems lost, there are incredible moments of hope, and that's one of the things that I explore in my book. And I even asked Sheriff Baca, who is the head of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, where is the sacred in this story? And he said, well, it was Steve Sorensen's mission to go out to the desert and protect God's creation.
Deanne Stillman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Deanne Stillman is the author of Desert Reckoning, A Town Sheriff, A Mojave Hermit, and The Biggest Manhunt in Modern California History. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
Now in its seventh year, the RTA has finished over 400 projects, including five major roadways. Current projects include the Modern Streetcar in downtown Tucson and Grant Road at Oracle. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. With ongoing support of expanded SunTran, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service, providing jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer, the RTA is delivering our promise to you.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
My name is Mark Layton, and I'm the IT guy over at O'Neill Printing. In order to serve my Tucson clients, I've got to be able to quickly receive files up to 10 gigs in size. That's why we made the switch to Cox Business. We used to have an internet connection that could barely handle more than 2 file uploads at a time. With Cox Business, our connection is 10 times faster, and our bill is 40% less. Now that's what I call a no-brainer.
Get to know the business side of Cox at coxbusinessaz.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. The early history of our region of Arizona and Sonora was profoundly influenced and determined by the Jesuit missionaries from Europe. After Padre Eusebio Kino's death in 1711, an increasing number of German-speaking Jesuits entered our region and soon dominated the entire missionary district. One of those missionaries, Swiss-born Philip Segesser, is the subject of a new book edited by Dr. Albrecht Clausen, University of Arizona Distinguished Professor and Undergraduate Advisor in the Department of German Studies. The name of Dr. Clausen's book is The Letters of the Swiss Jesuit Missionary Philip Segesser, an Eyewitness of the Settlement of 18th Century Sonora. Dr. Albrecht Clausen joins us now on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Clausen, good to see you again.
Bill, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me how this project evolved, and when did you first hear of this missionary Segesser?
It's actually a long history going back to the 1970s when the then director of the State Museum got interested because they have a huge collection and library of all kind of relevant material. And he had secured photographs of all the letters, but he never could find anyone who could even transcribe those letters. He approached me in the late 90s and asked me whether I could do this job. I looked at the documents and I said, no, I cannot read this. It's just very, very difficult handwriting. And
did you have to use a magnifying glass to even?
Well, it was difficult. First of all, we had then later someone who did his dissertation. He came directly from Germany, and he transcribed then all the letters into the computer, which then later made it possible for us to have at least a rough understanding of what those letters might have been.
So you did the actual translation then of these letters.
That's right.
But that was a huge undertaking.
It was the most difficult thing I've ever done in terms of translation. I do a lot of translation, let's say, from medieval German literature into English. But this 18th century hand, that was so difficult to read.
Well, I was intrigued by this project when you first brought it to my attention, because in our region, when we think of the early history, European history of the region, we think of Father Kino, Padre Kino. But we don't hear about these people who came over from Europe after Kino.
That's right. Because this
kind of this in-between period,
that's right,
of when,
yes,
when Kino died in 1711 until the founding of what is the current or the Presidio of Tucson, there's kind of that gap there. You don't hear about what
went
on, really.
Yes. Yeah. But Spain experienced simply a shortage of missionaries, and so they slowly opened up to the idea of allowing people from north of the Alps also to join the mission. And that was then the great time for Swiss, Austrian, primarily German, but also Czech or Bohemian, Croat, Polish, and other missionaries to come here.
And they came here. And tell me a little bit about these letters. What do they tell us that's important that you have discovered about our area and our history?
Maybe three major points could be really appealing for our readers. First of all, these are letters that really tell us of the daily life. What was going on? How did the interaction between the Jesuits and the Indians take place. The other really fascinating point is basically the end of the entire missionary activities. I would say Seeger is the best and the only real eyewitness who tells us in very short terms that the Apaches basically had won the war against the Jesuits.
He pretty much drove then the Jesuits out.
Very much so. He says in his last letters about 1762 that they're starving to death because no one dares to work on the fields anymore. Their animals have been killed or abducted, and the Indians are all over the place. They just don't know anymore what to do.
So that was pretty much a no man's land, at least for the Europeans in that area. You mentioned 1762 up until the founding of the actual Tucson Presidio in around 1776, I believe mm-hmm. that is the date.
Yeah.
So this was a very dangerous period before that
right.
to be a
yeah.
European missionary.
Well, it was not quite a no man's land. That's okay. a very difficult misnomer. After all, we have lots of different Indian tribes, who many of whom were peacefully then settled. But then you had others, like the Seris and the Apaches, who lived more to the north and northeast, who did not accept the colonization and the attempts by the Spaniards to conquer them, basically. They didn't want to be settled. And so you have really a very conflictual situation, different cultures. But the Jesuits really managed to establish a network of missions all over the Southwest.
We're talking with Dr. Albrecht Clausen, University of Arizona. He is a UA Distinguished Professor and Undergraduate Advisor in the Department of German Studies, and he has undertaken this huge task of translating a lot of letters from the Swiss Jesuit missionary Philip Segesser. And it really is an eyewitness account of the settlement of the 18th century area known as Sonora. Some of your area that you got into, he spent some time. First of all, what was this missionary like, Mr. Segesser? What kind of a person was he?
I translated all the letters, so I followed his early years as a young man. He came to this country when he was about 40. He was the oldest missionary ever to come here, and then I could trace his person development until his death. And he was a very devout, very passionately Catholic person. But he was also very devout to his parents and his family members. And so he writes these really passionate letters to his mother, to his brother, but also very, very pragmatic. He evolves. He faces a lot of very pragmatic needs. So many of these letters say something like, he needs tools, he needs seeds, he needs plants, he needs cloth, he needs vestments, he needs stuff for the church, he needs equipment for the kitchen. He asks his mother for recipes. How do I do Swiss cooking? How can I do this and that? And containers and whatever he asks in very pragmatic terms.
Tell me the time period that the letters cover.
Basically, for our interest, about 1732 to 1762. We have to realize that the communication between us and Europe took years. Normally, there's a 4 years, 5 years gap between what he writes or what he receives. It takes him 4 years to learn that his mother has died, for example.
Oh, my goodness. What about Father Kino or Padre Kino? Is he mentioned at all in the letters?
Basically not at all.
Is that surprising to you?
I was looking for Kino all the time, but no, that history is really not that important. They are so burdened with work daily, and he writes his letters in such a haste. He constantly says, the messenger is waiting on the horse. I have to finish. I have no time to correct. I have just to finish and write in the last lines, and off the letter goes. So no editing stage, and that made it extremely difficult for us even to translate. There are a lot of faults and complex sentence structures, fragmentary and so forth. But we try to make good sense out of it.
And you are a scholar of German studies, so I'm also fascinated by this whole process that you went through. And the language itself, what were you dealing with some of the challenges between the modern language of German and what you were encountering
right.
in your translations?
Well, basically, I'm first of all a medievalist. So I really deal with early modern and medieval German language, literature, and culture. But I also teach and do research on these 18th century German missionaries because they're really interesting, particularly for anyone who lives here. I worked, of course, then with students, and I'm teaching actually the course right now. So for us, it's really a fascinating approach to rediscover the history of early Sonora.
Where is your book going to be available?
The book is available, or it was printed at ACMIS, that's Tempe, at the University, at the Arizona State University. It is simply available online. You can simply go
through Amazon?
Through Amazon or the bookstore here on campus. It is a scholarly book. I mean, it was printed really by a scholarly press for a scholarly audience, but it really wants to be available for the larger audience, anyone who is interested in the daily history of our history, which is surprisingly very much determined by these early missionaries, German-speaking missionaries.
You say that Philip Segesser came over here when he was 40 years old. What was his life? Had he been, did he join the Jesuits at an earlier age and served in Europe? And then what prompted him to come to the New World?
I have read a lot of different accounts of Jesuits. So in general, it is always the same. They're very religious and they're Jesuits. So their task is really to be missionaries.
Well-educated people.
Highly educated. The Jesuits, until today, were some of the best educators, researchers, scholars. Think about the telescopes we have here and the Jesuits having a really big role in astronomy here in Arizona. That is a tradition which was actually started by Padre Aquino. Segesser was a teacher. He had gotten a very good education. And he was a teacher for many years until he was finally then called into the mission. That was his big dream. But I also discovered for the first time that he had kind of had a mystical vision. He saw that the Virgin Mary nodded to him, and he knew he was destined to
come right path.
Yeah. On the right path.
What happened to him?
Well, you have to imagine, first of all, that all these people who came here took a huge challenge.
Yeah, big time.
It's a scary situation. Suddenly to live then all by yourself, weeks sometimes away, or 3-4 days on horseback away from the next European. You're surrounded by people who speak a completely different languages, have a completely different culture. You are alone.
So talk about a huge challenge.
That's incredibly difficult. I mean, most actually survived. 2 or 3 got crazy and had to be sent back. But most struggled really hard. So these must have been people of greatest idealism.
We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Buckmaster Show. Please join us for the Buckmaster Show noon to 1, Monday through Friday on KVOI, AM 1030, Tucson's intelligent voice. And remember, our shows are posted to my website, buckmastershow.com, along with tucsoncitizen.com and tucsonsentinel.com. And there's a link to the program on the homepage of the Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun at gvnews.com. Also, a link on the homepage of Blog for Arizona at blogforarizona.com. I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a great day.